So, Raim Tovim, welcome everybody to part two of our series on Tefillin, part five in our general series on women and ritual, men, women, and ritual, a textual analysis today with Ilana Sober El Sufuan, and a pleasure to welcome her back. Part two on Tefillin. A number of people have asked, there will please go out be a class next week. On Hanukkah, as I say, we should do more learning of Torah on Hanukkah. And also, just while I'm at it, we will please go out and have a class every morning next week at 11 a.m., sort of the time we often do. Different speakers, everybody giving a speaker on Hanukkah. Rabbi Liebtag will give his class on Hanukkah, and then the other speakers will be different. We'll be sending out an email a little bit later on that. But okay, Ilan, I don't want to take away your time. So, Baruch Hashem, I'm looking forward to maybe I'll put on tefillin with extra kavana after the shir today.
Okay. So just to recap in 2 seconds what we did last week. Last week we looked at the question of women being exempt from tefillin, which is a Mishnah that says lists tefillin as one of the things that women are exempt from. There's some discussion of it in the Gemara back and forth, but basically works out that women are exempt from tefillin. We saw two basic reasons. One reason is that it is in the broad overarching category called mitzvot aseh shehazman grama, time-bound positive mitzvot. Hello? Okay. And women are from this whole category of mitzvot, including sukkah, including lulav, including tzitzit, and so on. Some of them they do voluntarily, some of them they don't. Okay. Reason number two that we saw is that there's a connection, a textual connection between tefillin and learning Torah, maybe also a conceptual connection because inside the tefillin are actual words of Torah, and that it's a textual derivation based on that. We also saw that Michal Bat Shaul, way back, right, in the time of King Saul, very long ago, wore tefillin. Now, the Gemara tells us she wore tefillin. And I'm going to stop with this. I'm going to go into this for a moment, even though it's review, because we're going to be discussing it again today. The Talmud Bavli says that she wore tefillin and the sages did not rebuke her. The Mechilta we saw also doesn't make any mention of rebuke. On the other hand, the Talmud Yerushalmi and the Psikta, we didn't bring the Psikta, but it's almost identical to the Yerushalmi, so don't worry about it, say that the sages did rebuke her. So we don't actually know what really happened. We have two conflicting narratives as to what really happened with Michal, and it's, you know, very far back in the depths of history. And the question of whether or not the sages rebuked her is going to come up in the halachic discussion. We saw a number of Rishonim, early authorities, who seem to categorize tefillin as similar to any other mitzvot aseh shehazman grama, positive time-bound mitzvah, from which women are exempt, that women can do voluntarily, just like women can voluntarily listen to the shofar, even though we aren't obligated to listen to the shofar, although women feel a pretty strong sense of obligation. Just like we can voluntarily sit in the sukkah, even though we aren't actually obligated. So we can also voluntarily choose to wear tefillin. The Rashba says that, the Chinuch says that, and it seems like it just fits into that category of positive time-bound mitzvot that women can choose to do. And we saw even that there seemed to have been some women who did it in certain communities. Then we turned to a discussion of the sanctity of tefillin. And we said, you know, this is a serious thing, right? We have these boxes, and in these boxes are parchments, and in the parchments are verses from the Torah, and in the verses from the Torah is God's name. And we saw that the Kohen Gadol had God's name on a sort of a golden tablet that he wore, you know, over his forehead, and he had to constantly be able to concentrate on that. And similarly with tefillin, you have to really be able to concentrate. You have to avoid hesech hadat, really removing your mind from it. You have to have your mind on some level, and the fact that you're wearing your tefillin certainly shouldn't be silly or frivolous when you're wearing them. You have to have a guf naki, and we saw a Gemara with Elisha Baal Knafayim, the story of the man who was wearing tefillin and ran away from the Romans, and he had a miracle, and we said it was because he was very, very careful to maintain a guf naki. So what's a guf naki? So maybe it means physically to stay clean, make sure not to pass gas and so on while you're wearing the tefillin. And maybe it has to do with a certain level of concentration and seriousness. We saw there was some particular concern about having sexual thoughts at the time that you're wearing the tefillin, to the point where there were certain authorities who said if they're young men who cannot control their thoughts at all, they should just not wear tefillin, which is pretty serious since this is a Torah level positive mitzvah that everybody needs to do. And that was where we finished last time. So now I'm going to just open up the source sheet for this time, and we're going to keep going. Okay. I would really like. Will let me do that? No, it won't let me do that. Okay. Good. Okay. Now, hopefully, I've gotten my act together. There we are. Okay. Now we get to an interesting question about men wearing tefillin. We will get back to women very shortly. We seem to have in the Middle Ages a record of communities and situations where men were not wearing tefillin at all. And we know that this is a thing that happens. I mean, I think we know also in, you know, America and Canada and so on of, you know, various times and various places where there are congregations where not every man in the congregation had a pair of tefillin. And there are a lot of reasons why this can be. Tefillin are expensive, for one thing. But we see Rishonim, you know, sort of haranguing their congregations that you really need to wear tefillin. This is an important mitzvah. And so on. And here, I'll give you an example. Here's a Tosfot, right? He says, Ein tema al mitzvah zot refuya biyadenu. This mitzvah is weak. We're not doing a good job as a community in keeping this mitzvah. And in fact, it's always been weak. We have records in Chazal, in the Talmud, that it was weak. The Or Chor Chaim, who's another Rishon. Again, he talks about the Poshei Yisrael. Okay, now I'm getting an echo. What just happened? Are you guys hearing me okay?
Yeah, I don't know if that was somebody. I'm trying to keep track. Keep talking. We'll let you know
if it could be that somebody isn't muted.
Correct. I think somebody unmuted themselves. I muted them, but yeah. Okay.
All right. Got it. Thanks. The Or Chor Chaim talks about, right, Poshei Yisrael, we're going to go to Gehenna, right, because they didn't wear tefillin. And then he says an interesting thing. That's if they don't wear them because of Bizui Mitzvah, right? They don't care about the mitzvah. That's not for me. Okay, that's a serious avera. You're skipping tefillin? Ma pitom. Okay, but he says, aval, mi shenimna mehem miyirato, shelo yuchal nakot atzmo v'lichvod ha-mitzvah, ein ze bichlalan. He says, there's some people who don't wear tefillin because they're afraid to wear tefillin. There's some people who say, these tefillin are too holy for me. Right? Some people say, I can't keep myself clean enough. I can't honor the tefillin properly. I'm intimidated. And he says, that's also wrong. In other words, you should wear tefillin, but you're not going to go to Gehenna for that. Okay, that's not despising the mitzvah. That's being overly cautious about the mitzvah. So one of the concern that we saw about tefillin being really holy, intimidatingly holy, having a very high level that you have to keep in order to wear tefillin, maybe was influencing men not to wear tefillin. And in fact, we talked briefly last time. We said, when are you supposed to wear tefillin all day long? In other words, you're not supposed to sleep in tefillin. But originally the mitzvah was that you put your tefillin on in the morning and you take them off at night and you wear them all day. And there are still very small numbers of people who do that. But most of us now follow the custom that the Rosh explains, right? V'ha'idna, nowadays, she'ein regilin l'hanichan ela b'sha'at ha'tfilah. We only wear them during tfilah, during davening. And why is that? Well, the Rosh explains, when you do that, b'kal yachol adam li'zaher b'otah sha'ah. to concentrate on tefillin, to maintain total seriousness, to never pass gas, right? To do all that for a whole entire day is quite challenging, right? That requires an especially holy person. But to do it for the hour of a weekday davening, or maybe less than an hour, depending if there's Torah reading and what shul you go to, that's something people can do. The Rosh says, you know what, you can manage to wear tefillin. Please wear tefillin. And you just have to wear them for davening. And in fact, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, brings down the halacha. Mitzvatan liyot alav kol hayom. Ideally, they should be, the mitzvah is the whole day. So it's a full day mitzvah. Aval. But. Mipnei shetzrichim guf naki shelo yafiach behem v'shelo yasiach da'atom mehem. Right, we need a guf naki, clean body, and that's both physical. For example, not to pass gas. And it's also in your head that you shouldn't remove your thoughts entirely from them. You have to have a certain level of concentration, a certain level of seriousness. Ve'ein kol adam yechol yizeher behem, nahaguf shelo lahanicham kol hayom. Right, the minhag has become, the custom is not to wear them all day. Umikol makom tzarich kol adam yizeher behem. You need to wear them during Kriyat Shema. We saw that last week also, that since two of the parshas of Tefillin are paragraphs from Kriyat Shema, that it's especially important to wear them during Kriyat Shema, because otherwise if you say Shema without Tefillin and you're obligated in Tefillin, it's a little bit backwards. And Tefillah, because Kriyat Shema is part of all of Tefillah. Nowadays, say if Chabad get you to put on tefillin, you just say Shema when you're wearing the tefillin, right? Shema is the most important prayer connected to tefillin. Okay, so the halacha works out. We see men not wearing tefillin. We don't know all of the reasons why they weren't wearing tefillin. Probably some of the reasons were better and some of the reasons were worse. But we do know that it seems to have been a mitzvah that was not favored. A mitzvah that a lot of people were being neglectful of. And it seems that one of the reasons may have been that people felt they weren't holy enough to wear the tefillin. They couldn't live up to the level of holiness and purity and cleanliness you need for tefillin. And what the halacha ended up being was that at some point, tefillin really became restricted just to morning tefillah and not to the rest of the day. Not to the rest of the day. Okay. That's to do with men. Men aren't necessarily wearing tefillin. And when they are wearing tefillin, and this is still the custom, they're wearing them only for the tefillat shacharit, the morning prayer. Now, what does this have to do with women wearing tefillin? Well, you remember we had a dispute between the tradition of the Talmud Bavli and the Mechilta and the tradition of the Talmud Yerushalmi and the Psikta. What did the sages think about Michal wearing tefillin? Did they rebuke her or not? Now, Tosfot and Eruvin wants to explain the position of the opponents of Michal. In other words, the position of those who say that the sages did rebuke her. Why would the sages have rebuked her, right? If we say that women are allowed to do a mitzvah that isn't obligatory, and then there's a whole question about that too. But if we take the position that women are allowed to perform a mitzvah that they are not obligated to perform, why shouldn't she do this particular mitzvah? And Tosfot say it seems that the reason of those who say delo have a reshut, she does not have permission. A woman does not have permission to do this mitzvah, even though women have permission to do most mitzvot, is because, for example, women have permission to hear shofar, right? There's nobody will say don't listen to shofar if you're a woman. Nobody will say don't take the lulav, right? The tzitzit we talked about is complicated, okay? Why not tefillin? The tefillin tzrichin guf naki, because tefillin require a guf naki. V'nashim ein zerizot lizaher. Women are not scrupulous to be careful about maintaining a guf naki. What does that mean exactly? So it's not entirely clear. In other words, there are different ways of saying why is it that guf naki should be a gender-specific concern, right? The example that we saw for guf naki, for example, not keeping control of your thoughts, that doesn't seem to be a greater problem for women than for men, possibly the other way around. The problem of passing gas would not seem to be a bigger problem for women than for men, as far as I know. Why could guf naki be a bigger problem for women? So one suggestion that always comes up and is always lurking there is just maybe because women menstruate. Could it have something to do with menstruation? So there is definitely a custom that existed in the Middle Ages that has fallen by the wayside, fortunately, but it existed in Ashkenazi communities, not in Sephardi communities, of women not going to synagogue when they had menstrual bleeding. And this wasn't connected to the question of Tuma and Tahara. In other words, when they're counting, right, in the laws of Nida, a woman has the time that she's actually bleeding, and then after she stops, she still counts 7 days without bleeding before she goes to the mikvah. And during that whole time, her ritual status is of ritual impurity, tuma nida. But the custom that of women not going to synagogue was only if they were actively bleeding. If they were counting their 7 days, even though they hadn't been to the mikvah, and their halachic status hadn't changed at all, they would still go to synagogue. So there does seem to have been a sense that there's something improper about going to synagogue or doing other holy things when you're menstruating. Now, is that really coming out of a strong halachic source? No. There's a text called Brita de Nida or something like that, which nobody knows where it comes from. And it may well come from a source that is not normative Judaism at all. That's one of the textual sources for it. We don't know quite where it comes from. It's a custom. It does not extend to all Jewish communities. It isn't practiced nowadays, but it may have influenced practice and practical rulings in communities where women aren't even going to shul when they have their period. So they're probably also not going to be putting on tefillin. Another question that's related is what kind of hygiene products did they have? In other words, if a woman is menstruating and she's able to keep herself clean, then that's not a problem. But if she doesn't have hygiene products that are effective, then she's really not necessarily in the category of guf naki. So that could indeed have been a problem. And not only have menstrual hygiene products improved over the centuries, diapers have also improved over the centuries. So since a lot of women would have been taking care of babies and toddlers and so on, they might have had trouble keeping themselves and their clothes clean from children who didn't have, you know, Pampers, but had whatever version they were using back then. Okay. So one possibility is that the reason why this is a gender-specific concern is because women literally have more trouble keeping their bodies clean in the most simple sense of the word, right? They're dealing with menstrual hygiene. They're dealing with diapers. It can definitely affect your ability to stay clean. Possibility number two, we can say that women are just more distracted. In other words, if we want to concentrate not so much on the guf naki, meaning I'm physically keeping my body clean, but guf naki, meaning I'm concentrating, and she has a 1-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old running around, she may not be concentrating. So maybe we say that women just don't have the ability to really be concentrated and focused in the same way that men do. And therefore, women are less careful about guf naki. A third possibility, I want to look now at the Rashba and the Magen Avraham. The Rashba says, he's getting into the whole discussion of the background to Michal Bat Shaul. But roughly he says, according to the opinion that the sages at the time of Michal rebuked her, we say they rebuked her because tefillin tzrichin guf naki kelisha bal knafayim, v'nashim einam nekiot lo nekiot guf v'lo nekiot da'at. Could be that it's both elements, right? Physically and mentally, they don't have either the hygiene level or the level of concentration. L'rabbanan lo michu. But what about the opinion that they didn't rebuke her? V'lo hodu lo. Right? It says they didn't rebuke, and they also didn't agree. They didn't say, hey, you did a great thing. And they also didn't say you did a terrible thing. Okay. They didn't agree. Shema lo yishmru behem yafeh. Right? Maybe they won't be careful. V'lo michu de'efshar de'kevan de'hechzika b'mitzvatan nizharot b'hem. It says maybe women who choose to wear tefillin, like Michal, and they wear them regularly, are careful. Maybe not all women are careful. Maybe not everybody can always be careful. But these women who hechzika b'mitzvatan, women who are doing the mitzvah in practice, can be careful. And the Magen Avraham, who's a few centuries later, he's saying, he's commenting already on the Shulchan Aruch. In the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, which we're going to see in a moment, says that one should rebuke a woman who wears tefillin. So what does the Magen Avraham say? He says, why should one rebuke a woman who wears tefillin? Mipnei shetzuchin guf naki v'nashim einan zrizot lihizaher. We saw that phrase already. Women are not scrupulous to be careful. Aval im hayu chayavim, lo hayu pturim mehay ta'ama. But if women were obligated, let's say tefillin weren't a mitzvah tasei shezman grama, or whatever reason, let's say women had to wear tefillin, then they would not be exempt. The Havi Rami Anafshaihu U Mizdahari, because then they would be careful. So he seems to say that if you are obligated to wear tefillin, then you're able to be careful. The obligation and the carefulness are linked. If you are just voluntarily wearing tefillin and you say, well, I feel like wearing tefillin even though I'm not obligated, you may not take it as serious. It's like a psychological kind of argument. Once you're exempt, you may take the requirements more lightly, and then you won't be careful about, say, passing gas in the same way that a man would be because he is obligated. So those are the possible reasons why gender might somehow be connected to guf naki. Now the Aruch HaShulchan kind of ties all this together. He ties what we saw about the sanctity of tefillin and about men's reluctance to wear tefillin and the question of guf naki. And this Aruch HaShulchan is sort of quoted. A lot of the ideas in it are pretty central to the way that halachic authorities tend to look at the question of tefillin these days, right? So this is the Aruch HaShulchan. It's like 100 and some years ago. Okay. Anashim shemuchuyavim behechreach shizaharu behem b'sha'at kriyat shema utzfila v'lachein ein menichin kol hayom. Right? He says, men have to be careful. So they wear them, right? Only during kriyat shema utzfila, not all day. Right? Men have no choice. Right? So they minimize the time they wear tefillin. V'im kein nashim shepturot lama yachnisu atzman b'chashash gadol kazeh. Why should women put themselves into this situation? Men have no choice. They have to wear tefillin, so they wear it for the minimum amount of time, and hopefully they'll control their physical and mental cleanliness and be able to live up to it. Women don't have that requirement. Why should we voluntarily put ourselves into a situation where we might do a serious sin of, you know, sort of defiling the tefillin? Ve'etzlan, b'sha'at kriyat shma tefila, kila anashim kol hayom. And he makes a very clear comparison. Women during davening is the same thing as men all day long. It's optional. And just like men don't wear tefillin all day long because it's optional and it's a very serious responsibility that it's hard to live up to, and we would look askance at a man who wasn't a major tzaddik wearing tefillin all day long, women during davening are in the same, have the exact same status. It's a really serious responsibility and it's a really big risk of you know, a major sin. So don't do it. Right? Gafikach ein menichinotan lehaniach tefillin. So we don't let them wear tefillin. In other words, we tell them no. And so he says, well, what about Michal? Right? Va'af agav detanya be'irvin to Michal bat Shaul hayta manachat tefillin v'go michbachachamim. Right? We follow the Talmud Bavli. Our halachic tradition follows the Babylonian Talmud. And we know that the sages didn't rebuke Michal. Why not? Well, ein l'maydin mizeh. That's not a source for how we should behave nowadays. Demistama yadu shehi tzadeket gemura v'yadali hizeher. Michal was apparently a very, very righteous woman who knew how to take care. So this is actually stays within the analogy because there are men nowadays who wear tefillin all day long. Rav Scheinberg's atzah used to wear tefillin all day long. There exist, you know, rabbinic figures who will wear tefillin all day long, and everybody knows that they're big tzaddikim and they can do this. See, Michal was like that. People knew she was a big tzaddik, a big tzaddiket, a very righteous woman. She's an exception. But women in general should not wear tefillin because of guf naki concerns. And those can either be understood as physical, as mental, as psychological. For whatever reason, women may or may not be more prone to them, but that what's interesting about the Aruch HaShulchan is the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't say anything about women having an inherently greater tendency to have problems with guf naki. The Aruch HaShulchan seems to say women and men are exactly the same when it comes to guf naki. Women have a hard time with guf naki and men have a hard time with guf naki. Everyone has a hard time with guf naki. However, women have no obligation to wear tefillin, and therefore they should not get themselves tangled up in this problem of having to maintain a guf naki with tefillin. Men have no choice. Women have a choice. So women should be prudent and not wear tefillin. Michal wore tefillin, she was a tzaddiket. Women in general are not like that. So that's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. And that is, I think, those of you who have heard sort of the argument why women shouldn't wear tefillin have probably heard that argument. I think it's a pretty, at least that's the one that I have always heard. And it's a reasonable argument. It's entirely reasonable argument. And I think people nowadays find it a fairly comfortable argument because it doesn't say, you know, women are especially dirty or especially unfocused. It just says women aren't obligated. So since we saw the Aruch HaShulchan mentioned Michal being a tzaddiket, being especially righteous, I just want to look at a few other sources that talk about maybe there are women who could be an exception. So go back to the Yamshel Shlomo, the Maharshal. Okay, Delo michu b'michal, lefi shehaita tzaddiket gemura. Michal was a totally righteous woman. Not only was she totally righteous, she was also an Eshet Melech. She was a queen. She had a lot of maids. She had probably as much water as she needed, right? She had lots of clothes to change into, right? If there were women who had a hard time keeping themselves physically clean, The queen was not one of them. Okay, she had to go with every outfit. Who knows, right? But she really, really was, if anybody could keep herself clean, being an Eshet Melech would make a big difference. Not only that, we know from the Pasuk, right? She didn't have any children, right? So therefore, all of the concerns that we were talking about diapers, and all the concerns we're talking about concentration and focus and everything else, not that the queen would necessarily be personally changing diapers, but in any case, she didn't have any babies. And that's another reason why it might have been easier for her to be clean. So the Yom Shem Shlomo says, A, she was, you know, spiritually very, very righteous, so she would be more careful. And B, her material circumstances, both in a positive way that she was the queen and in a not so positive way that she didn't have children, all of them, all three of those factors made her the ideal woman to lay tefillin. Because any particular reason why guf naki would be harder for women would not affect Michal. The Afer Alev, the Rav Falaji, says a more esoteric sort of thing, which is kind of interesting. If Sharlo Marda Michal Bachul Haita Isha Chachama, the Adabat Masha Haita La Neshama Me Alma De Duchra. Maybe she had a masculine soul. In other words, we say this is a mitzvah that usually men do. Something about Michal's soul. Why did she connect to that mitzvah? Her own soul perhaps was especially connected to the masculine in some way. And therefore, perhaps that's also why she didn't have children. Again, this gets, once we say my alma de duchra, it sounds like it might be Kabbalistic and I don't understand it. But maybe there's another level of exception. We talked about exception for being righteous. We talked about an exception for being able to keep oneself clean. We talked about an exception for being able to concentrate. Maybe there's also an exception that has to do with a particular woman's soul is connected to tefillin because maybe her soul is a little different from other women. Again, I'm not going to go further into it because it's not the area that I understand anything about. The Olat Tamid, by the way, which is one of the very few sources that, you know, is a post Shulchan Aruch source, a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch that entertains the possibility that women can wear tefillin, says as follows: Miha, however, meha da amin de lo michu bachachamim, the sages do not rebuke Michal. Mashma de im haisha zakena, viadinan bashi odati, shmoratma de enlim chotva. He brings in another. Because if the woman is old, okay, what does he mean by old? Presumably he means postmenopausal, right? In other words, he may be going back to the idea that menstruation is the problem. And he says, if she's old, and by the way, that's also going to solve the menstruation problem and also the problem of her having little kids running around. And she knows, and possibly also contributes to her being more serious. So maybe such a woman, one does not need to rebuke. In other words, he doesn't say, oh, it's fine for her to wear tefillin. She should wear tefillin. But maybe he says, you don't need to rebuke her because she will not have any particular problem with guf naki. Okay, so we've seen guf naki as a reason for women not to wear tefillin, either because women may have a more difficult time objectively maintaining a guf naki, or because since women are exempt, that may make them less likely to be careful, or because since women are exempt, they shouldn't get themselves into trouble that way. And now we're going to look at the Maharam, which is a major important Rishon of, I think, the 13th century, who says, and the Maharam says, first of all, just to put him in context, so he says, women can wear tzitzit, right? Those of you who were with Lori's shiur a few weeks ago, right? Know that that's not going to be the unanimous conclusion of all halachic authorities for all time. So we're not going to say the Maharam is not, you know, crazy right wing. Okay. Omnam, ein lahen laniach tefillin, but they should not put on tefillin. The fish einan yodot lishmor atzman b'tahara. So he brings this as a clear halachic ruling. When not careful about tahara, now by tahara he seems to mean nikiyut. In fact, his student Or Chor Chaim quotes him and says more or less the same thing. Imbau lahanich tefillin in shomim lahem lefish einan yodot lishmat man benikiyut. So when he says tahara, it doesn't seem like he means ritual purity. You know, that sort of impurity that you would get rid of by going to the mikvah. That's a halachic status and doesn't have to do with physical cleanliness. He seems to be talking more about nikiyut, meaning physical cleanliness. So he says women may not wear tefillin. And Or Chor Chaim, in fact, raises an objection to this, right? He says, we know that Michal Bat Sha'ul wore tefillin, right? And he says, V'harashba matir lahen, kol mitzvot aseh l'varecha lahen, right? We saw that in the Rashba last week, for those who were here last week. And he says, Mizeh ha-ma'aseh, right? From what we saw about Michal, v'lo michu biyada elo baratzon chachamim avda. We think that Michal acted according to the will of the sages. In other words, they were happy with what she did. So we're already seeing that, say, the Maharam and his student, the Or Chor Chaim, are not necessarily in agreement. The Beit Yosef, who's the author of the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, so the Beit Yosef is his longer and more detailed work, right? He says, why is the Maharam strict? Why is he machmir? Why does he say she shouldn't? He says, Maharam ratza lechush l'divrei psikta. In other words, the Maharam's halachic ruling here goes according to the tradition that we saw from the Psikta and the Yerushalmi that the sages did rebuke Michal. Okay, so let's get to the Shulchan Aruch, right? So Rav Yosef Karo, in addition to writing the Beit Yosef, wrote the Shulchan Aruch. And he writes, Nashim v'avadim p'turim mitfilim ifnei shehu mitzvat aseishas man grama. Okay, women and bondsmen do not wear, are exempt from tefillin because it's a positive time bound mitzvah. He doesn't say anything about whether women may do it voluntarily, but the Ramah, right, of Moshe Isserles, who always represents sort of the Ashkenazi approach, right, says, Ve'im hanashim rotzin lachmir al atzman, if women want to be stringent, right? Now, Ramah isn't saying that it's, you know, anything bad about these women who want to wear tefillin. He says they want to be machmir, they want to be stringent, they want to do an extra mitzvah. But it's not appropriate. If women want to be stringent, mochin biyadam, we rebuke. Even though that's in the Ramah and it's not in the Shulchan Aruch, that is the generally accepted psak among both Ashkenazim and Sephardim, Orthodox, right? Is that women should not wear tefillin. And that if they do wear tefillin, one should rebuke them. Obviously, whether one actually rebukes people in practice is a whole nother question, right? In most cases, you know, even if you are, you know, a very fervent follower of the Shulchan Aruch, I would not suggest that you go up to a woman who happens to be wearing tefillin and rebuke her. It's not usually a good idea. It's not usually productive, for example, to rebuke people, whatever they're doing, you know. Someone's driving to shul, you also probably shouldn't rebuke. But the idea is that it's not viewed in a positive light. And certainly if, you know, you're an Orthodox rabbi and a woman comes up to you and says, should I wear tefillin? You would say, no, you really should not. And that's the ruling of the Shulchan Aruch. And we see that it seems to come, reflects the ruling of the Maharam and reflects that whole tradition that women should not be voluntarily fulfilling this particular mitzvah. Are there any other reasons why women shouldn't wear tefillin? So very quickly, because for those of you who heard Lori's shiur, she went into this with tzitzit, and it's really the same question. And it's recorded in the, you know, TIM recording things, okay? Kli gever, right? Tefillin are a masculine garment. People who are not used to seeing women in tefillin, certainly if they see a woman wearing tefillin, are going to immediately think that there's some boundary crossing going on here in terms of what's gender appropriate. The Pasuk in Devarim tells us, "Lo yeh kli gever al isha," a man's article should not be on a woman. And the Targum Yerushalmi gives an example of tzitzit and tefillin as the paradigm of men's articles. On the other hand, the Sri De'esh says that the whole problem with wearing men's articles is if a woman wants to specifically cross gender boundaries. How we feel about this halacha, I'm not getting it into, but in practice, if she's wearing men's items because she wants to look like a man, we have a halachic problem. But the Sri De'esh says, Mikevan shemitzkavenet l'shem mitzvah ein kan isur lo yilbash. If she's not trying to look like a man, she's trying to do a mitzvah, then that's fine. Just like we say, if a woman throws on a man's raincoat because it's raining and she wants to keep dry, that's not a problem of kli gever. So similarly, if she puts on tefillin because she wants to do a mitzvah, that's not a problem of kli gever. Okay, let's see. The next source I brought, I'm not even going to understand it. Another consideration might be that there's some mystical reason why tefillin are more appropriate for men than women. This is here on the source sheet. It's in Derecheha. I don't really understand it, but it is another type of consideration that's been brought in. Yuhara, that spiritual conceit, thinking I'm better than everybody else. I'm sort of more spiritual. I do more mitzvahs. That was an issue that got brought up a lot with tzitzit. Maharam Shik also brings it up with tefillin. He brings up two problems with tefillin. One problem is yura, and the other problem is that maybe other, if one woman wears tefillin and she's very, very righteous, and she's very educated, she understands the problems of gufnaki, she won't have a problem with gufnaki. Other women will see her and they will be nichshal. They won't be able to maintain guf nakir. They won't realize that they're supposed to, and that's another potential problem. Next problem, modesty. So some of you who know me for like really long time know that until I was about 20, I did put on tefillin on a regular basis. Most people who have known me less time don't know that. But I remember that when I was putting on tefillin, at that time, of course, I wasn't married. I said, well, when I do get married, I'm not going to be able to continue because you can't really put on tefillin if you're covering your hair. And that's actually a question that Hagahot Maimoniot raises with tefillin, right? He gives an example of b'hanachat tefillin mishum erva d'se'ar b'isha erva, right? With tefillin, you have a problem that her hair will be exposed. Why? Because if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, it says, Makom anachat tefila shorosh, me'atchalat ikarei ha-se'ar, right? The lowest place where the tefillin can be is already where you have hair growing. And furthermore, you write, lo yedavar chotseitz bein tefillin libsaro. You can't have something in between the tefillin. So you can't put on a hat and then put the tefillin on top of your hat, or on top of your scarf, or on top of your shetel. The Mishnah Brura specifically says a man cannot wear a toupee and have tefillin on top of them. It has to be touching your actual hair. And you have to be able to see the knot in the back. If people want to go on Derecha, I didn't put this on the source sheet, but there is a woman who wears tefillin who wrote a whole blog piece about the challenges of how can you put on tefillin shel rosh with a kisui rosh. And more or less, the solution that she found was to put a talit gadol entirely over her head, right? And then, when she was completely covered with the talit, take off her kisui rosh. She had like an easy take on like a snood or something, right? Put on her tefillin. And then she could sort of have a way to put the kisui rosh back on in a way that it wasn't covering her tefillin. And then she could write. But then also, first of all, if people are very careful about covering all of their hair, that's not going to work. In any case, it's not actually as minor a consideration as it seems. Like when you think about the practicalities of it, it is difficult for a woman who covers her hair to put on tefillin. Now, obviously, if the woman isn't married, that's not a problem. If the woman is putting on tefillin in private, that's not a problem. And by the way, if a woman is putting on tefillin in private, then yuhara, spiritual conceit, is also probably not a problem, the same way that it may not be a problem with tzitzit. But that's a practical consideration that once a woman's firm woman starts to think about putting on tefillin, she needs to figure out how to deal with. The shelyad, also, depending on how a woman feels about sleeves, the shelyad is all the way up sort of at the middle of your arm, like on your bicep. Again, a lot of women don't wear sleeves that are that short, but you can cover up the shelyad. So you just need like very wide sleeves, right? So if you have a shirt that has wide sleeves, you can just work underneath your shirt, putting on the arm tefillin. But again, it's a practical consideration. It's not the most important halachic consideration, but it's also something that women who actually think about doing the mitzvah think about. Okay, we're almost at the end of our time. We're also up to the section that's called practical ruling. So the Shiltegi Borim is like 500 years ago. Okay, so he says, why does he says, Kein asur l'nashim lahaniach tefillin mipnei shenireh kederach hachitzonim. He brings another reason. He says, it looks like the separatists. It looks like the people who are not adhering to traditional halachic Judaism. Sheovrim al divrei chachamim ve'einan rotzim lidrosh hamikraot kamotan. People who are not adhering to the Torah Shebaal Peh the way we have it. So we see already a very old source that's going to raise a question that comes up in more modern poskim, which is that possibly women wearing tefillin is a rebellious act. And this is very much a personal question, but if it's an act of rebelling against rabbinic authority, so whatever you're doing is not appropriate, right? Shouldn't do mitzvot in order to rebel against rabbinic authority. Okay. And you do, and now we're going to jump now to the 20th and 21st century, to really contemporary poskim who are dealing with the fact that in the 20th and 21st century, you do have women who want to wear tefillin. Now, on a personal level, when I was wearing tefillin in Camp Ramah, which is conservative, in the early 1980s, that was fairly unheard of. Over the course of the next few decades, it certainly became much more common in conservative circles, and certainly something that existed and happens in Orthodox circles. And therefore, it's a question that there are a lot of articles about. You know, when we're writing articles for Drachar, when Lori is writing articles for Drachar, there are topics where she says, you know, there aren't any articles about women and tefillin is not in that category. Okay, there are articles about women and tefillin, and I confess that I have not read all of them. One of them, a very nice one, is by Rabbanit Malka Piotrkowski in her book of Bahalechet Bedarka. And she writes as follows: Sha'af Shabuvat Rishonim Nimtzu Poskim Rabim Shehitiru L'Nashim L'Kayim Mitzvat Tefillin. She says, yes. Among the Rishonim, there were Rishonim, medieval authorities who allowed women to wear tefillin, right? The Rashba. Okay? Hare she'im notzra achdut de'im b'tkufat ha'achronim she'im ra'ui le'isha laniach tefillin. However, in the time of the Achronim, the later authorities, post-Shulchan Aruch, we have a fairly unanimous halakhic consensus. Women may not put on tefillin. We still have a klalei hapsika. What are the rules of sak? Hilchotak batrai. We follow the later authorities, meaning when you're paskening halacha, you don't go back and see what the Rishonim said and completely ignore what anybody has said for the last 500 years. That's not how halacha works. Yeah, maybe it was different 500 years ago. Maybe it was different 1,000 years ago, but we are living 1,000 years ago. So that's the psak. That's what all the poskim say. That's what all the achronim say. That's halacha. And she says, "Eli imkin yishnam nimukim mahutim shabikocham lishnota bezmanenu." unless there's some reason why it should change in our time, right? Talmud Torah is a good example, women learning Torah. Maybe there's some reason why now is different from 100 years ago, but she doesn't seem to feel that with tefillin there's any reason why the considerations that applied 100 years ago shouldn't apply now. And therefore, the halacha consensus is the halacha consensus. Rav Tzvi Schechter also, right from YU, says, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but he says, right, that Gam inyan ze shel shinui ha-mesorah mehaveh chelek atzmi min ha-halacha, right? We have a mesorah, we have a tradition, we have a way that we've been doing things for centuries, and that's part of halacha. Igrot Moshe says more or less exactly what the Aruch HaShulchan says. In other words, man, right? He says, Tzrichi de tefillin, tzrich zrizut merubeh beguf naki, v'tam do af anashim nimnaim milah nicham kol yom. Even men don't wear them all day, right? Men minimize the time they wear them, and so all the more so women. Moreover, Rabbi Rav Henkin also says women should not wear tefillin. He has a tshuva. He says, tzitzit, there may be room. Tzitzit, there's room. Tefillin, no. The Shulchan, the Ramah says, mochin b'adam, no. And he points out, v'hitiru Talmud Torah l'isha l'itzurich. Says there is a real need for women to learn Torah. There are a lot of reasons why nowadays women need to learn Torah. Setzim inam litzorech, right? There's no need for a woman to wear tefillin, and therefore there's no need for special leniency, given that the Ramah says it's forbidden, right? Or that we should rebuke women who do it. Not forbidden is a strong one. Given that the Ramah says no, given that the tradition of poskim since the Shulchan Aruch is overwhelmingly no, and given that there isn't a pressing reason to say, yes, this is not an appropriate avenue for women to be expanding their mitzvah observance. Right? There's no shortage of wonderful spiritual paths and opportunities that women can choose to take to strengthen their connection to God. And tefillin is not the recommended way. Now, I'm just going to finish. There are a couple of modern Israeli poskim who seem to take a slightly different tack. One is Rav Yaakov Ariel, writes, again, this is taken in proportion, but im isha margishat tzorech nafshi amok, right? So Rav Hengen said, there is no tzorech. You don't need to do it. Find something else to do, right? Rav Ariel says, maybe there is a tzorech. Maybe a particular woman feels a tzorech. Maybe she feels a need. She has a spiritual need that she connects to this mitzvah for whatever reason. He says, this is not like strongly permissive language, but he says, yesh la ulai al mi lismoch. She might have upon whom to rely. In other words, he's willing to say, you know, if she feels like a real need, maybe she can go back and rely on the Rashba. And maybe the Olatz Tamid, you know, there are sources, you know, on the farther back you go, on Michal, right, there exist sources. We have, again, you know, stories of, you know, a woman here and a woman there. I saw in Peninei Halacha, which is the next source, which is the last source on the page, actually, he says we have a tradition that the wife of the Or HaChaim, which is a commentary on the Torah, that she wore tefillin, I forget which century, several centuries ago. We have a tradition that the maid of Ludomir wore tefillin. Maybe there's a woman with a real spiritual need. Maybe that's not the end of the world. Maybe she has upon whom to rely. The Pinei Halacha, which is Rav Malamed, who is he's a very prolific writer. He is a very creative and independent halachic thinker, and he's and a very good writer, and he's writing sort of the books that everybody looks up halacha in Israel today. And they're all available online, which means that they're starting to look that everybody looks up halacha in everywhere, because they're also in like English and French and everything else. So he's an important voice in terms of where people are getting their practical 21st century halacha. And this is what he says. He says, "L'fichach isha harotza li'italut b'mitzvot." A woman wants to elevate herself from mitzvot. "U'bara li'sholim tov la'shataniach tefillin ha'ora'a shelo taniach." Right? You're a rabbi. Rabbit's a rabbanit. And a woman comes to you and says, "Should I put on tefillin?" The answer is, I want to connect to God. Can I put on tefillin? And the answer is no. But im b'chol zot tishtokek v'tirtze la'anichan b'tzina'ah. But if she really, really wants to put them on b'tzina'ah, in private, not in public, not in shul. Okay? Af sherabim katvu sheish limchotz b'yada, even though many people have written that we should rebuke her. Mikol makom kevan sheyesh la al mili smoke, she has upon whom to rely. That's also what Rav Ariel said. She had, there are sources that permit. Ein nachon limchok b'yada. We shouldn't rebuke her. And he says that's a general principle. In other words, if somebody has a source, even if it's a weak source, even if it's a posek, you would never use this source as the basis for a leniency, except in the most dire of situations. But she has a source, that's already reason not to rebuke her. So again, he doesn't say she may. And he says elsewhere in this, by the way, this is interesting. He says, even if she does, she really should not do it while she's menstruating. In other words, he seems to go back to the tradition that there's something specific about menstruation, apparently connected to that old tradition about women not going to shul, and I'm not sure why he brings that halacha, but he does. But he, again, he doesn't say yes, she should. He says you should tell her no. The answer is no, but if she does it, you also shouldn't rebuke her. Now, that's about as far as, you know, I've seen. Those are really the mainstream accepted halachic opinion. So what we come down to, bottom line, is that the practical ruling follows the Ramah. The Ramah says if a woman wants to be stringent upon herself and put on tefillin, then we rebuke her. And more or less, the modern halachic authorities in the 21st century generally follow this position, that we have a clear halachic tradition that frowns on this as a voluntary practice, quite possibly because of guf naki, because one should not voluntarily take upon oneself a practice that requires a great deal of care and carries a great deal of spiritual risk. And therefore, a woman should not wear tefillin. However, there's certainly, aside from the fact that, you know, in practice, one should not actually go about rebuking people, the Pnina Halacha clearly paskins that, you know, one should not necessarily rebuke. And that's more or less where we wind up. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen. And I see there are 14 things in the chat. So I'm going to go back to the beginning. Okay. There does not seem to be as much of a requirement of cleanliness and seriousness when holding a whole Sefer Torah as there seems to be about tefillin. We actually do require one to be reasonably clean and serious when holding a Sefer Torah, but here we're talking about even less time than with tefillin. Because the maximum amount of time that somebody would be physically holding a Sefer Torah is either probably on Simchat Torah, which I think people are usually fairly focused on the Torah, or during the Haftorah when someone's holding the Torah before you put it back in the Aron, but it's less time. But yes, there should be a concern there. But in Achinami, maybe there may be sociological things going on as well. Torah is not a mitzvah to seisha hazman grama. Torah is a mitzvah from which women are exempt, but it is not a positive time-bound commandment. There is a separate drasha, which we actually saw last week, because it says, "Limadim otam et b'neichem." You should teach them to your children, but it all means you teach them to your sons and not your daughters. So it's a separate textual derivation to exempt women from studying. When you speak about time periods when people did not wear tefillin, was there a widespread practice to do so during the time of David? If not, what was the discussion about Michal Bat Shaul about? All right. Going back and doing social history or any kind of history to the time of David, or archaeology even. I mean, you know, this is not the forum to discuss all the questions that archaeologists raise about David HaMelech, but we really have very, very little solid information. And we definitely do not have solid information about people putting on tefillin. We found a few tefillin from the time of Bar Kokhba, which is, you know, extraordinary, which is, you know, millennia after David. We didn't find them from the time of David because we don't find anything much that's not made of stone from back then. So we don't know. Okay. Funny, these days we'd be more likely to say that men aren't so good about gufnaki. Yes, true. Wouldn't someone wearing tefillin all day be yuhara, arrogant about being a tzaddik? Conceivably, yes. But it's not brought up so much. In general, the only people who do it are people who are sort of already recognized to be tzaddikim, I think. There is a potential problem there. Would lactation and nursing have been an aspect of gufnaki? Probably not, is my instinctive answer. I seriously doubt it. I think it much more has to do, if we're talking about the physical level, it's either things like passing gas, which are not gender specific, or if it's something gender specific, it would be either menstruation or diaper changing issues. So Michal was trans. Again, we don't know what that, these sort of, no, it doesn't mean Michal was trans. Okay, I see everybody has already had discussions about this. What it means, what the nature of one's soul is in regards to gender is a question that I simply am not qualified to discuss. Michal not having children or additional children was a punishment. How is she considered such a tzaddik? So there are no tzaddikim in Tanakh who did not ever sin, right? David sins even more seriously than Michal, I think, and he was punished even more seriously than Michal. So even if a person does sins and averot, they can still be a tzaddik or a tzaddik. Shulchan Aruch doesn't say anything about avadim who want to put on tefillin, probably because they didn't have Canaanite slaves really in the time of the Shulchan Aruch. I don't think the Shulchan Aruch talks that much about avadim because I don't think that was really so much part of his reality that Jews had non-Jewish slaves. I can see Talit is a beged, but not tefillin. I assume that's a reference to the idea of a man's article. The idea of a man's article is not specifically a beged. It can be, it's brought up, for example, with the question of women carrying guns. It's an accessory associated with men, not specifically a garment. Aren't earlier poskim usually considered greater than later ones? Yes, it's sort of a paradox. On the one hand, you know, the farther back you go, the greater. On the other hand, we nowadays, when we're talking about the practical halacha that we follow what people say today. We don't go back hundreds of years or thousands of years and say that's what people said back then. What do current people say about men who are incontinent and wearing diapers? I don't think that they would be allowed to wear tefillin. Certainly not if they had fecal incontinence. They would not be able to wear tefillin. Would you share more about your own motivation for wearing tefillin when you did so? Do you miss it? Well, that's like a good question for the last second of class. Okay, I started wearing tefillin. My Imi Morati, my mother is here. She was wearing tefillin long before I was bat mitzvah. And so I got tefillin for my bat mitzvah. So that's, I didn't have like any great independent motivation, but it was certainly a mitzvah that I connected to. And I really stopped doing it 30 years ago. So, you know, I would say, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, I miss it on a consistent basis. It was definitely a fairly difficult thing to stop doing, and there were various reasons why I decided to stop, mainly having to do with the halachot that we've been learning. Okay, there is Hilchot Avadim in Yoredeya, but so it exists, but I don't think that there's as much discussion because I don't know how, there are a lot more women in the community than Avadim. So he may not get into all the questions about Avadim in other series, but yes, thank you. Okay. Are there any? Okay, so that's the end of questions on the chat, and I think that's probably also the end of the time that we're supposed to have. So if anybody has anything else, good. And otherwise, thank you very much.
Now. They can speak up now. Forever hold your breath, right? Okay. It is okay. Thank you very much. I imagine there, you know, there's more to say perhaps at a future day. We'll see what happens in 50 years. And I think it's, you know, you see the beginnings of change within some of the poskim. I think only in Israel. I don't think you see it in America at all, like, which I think is true about a lot of these issues. There's a more openness.
Right. So you also have, I mean, something I didn't bring up is the whole feminist question. In other words, once, and that's something that people tend to be more sensitive to in the US and Canada than in Israel, I think, as you say, well, if conservative Jews and reform Jews are doing this, we definitely will not. And that's something that's much, much stronger in the United States than it is in Israel for various reasons.
Yeah, although it's quite interesting now that you mentioned that, Rav Melamed recently met, I believe, with the reform rabbi, created a big stir in Israel. Because in Israel, that here that's actually is more common in America. You know, the New York Board of Rabbis, whatever, it's a whole other issue that exists. But in Israel, I think that was a pretty big first. I didn't follow the whole issue, but I know Ramallah did meet, and I know he was heavily criticized, of course, for it, like anything you do, which is new.
But he's a very interesting person, Rav Melamed. He's in some things he's like remarkably liberal, and you know, in politics he's like, you know, impossibly far to the right, but a very, very independent thinker.
Right. Listen, all
I think for a rabbi generally seen as where he is on the right left spectrum to meet with a reform rabbi in America would have also created quite.
Okay. You know that better than I would, but you, what you said is correct. He's becoming the posek, I think, for hundreds of thousands of Israelis just because of his writings. His books are accessible and popular, and he writes very clearly. And, anyways, okay. Thank you.